Hello. Welcome to episode 91 of Add This to Your List, Rona edition.
It's been the Corona edition for like the past month, and it's going to keep being the Corona edition.
Isn't it so funny how, like a month ago, we were like, let's pick our favorite virus movies, and now we're oh, shit.
What the hell?
Whoops. Sorry, everyone.
I'm Fumi Simano, joined by Tom Chuba and Mark J. Parker.
Hi, everyone. Happy quarantine.
Happy quarantine. I mean, what is there to say? We're going to try to give you guys a lovely, lighthearted, fun episode.
Oh, yeah.
But we know that, like, we're going through it. We know y'all are going through it. So we're just in it together, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
We're here to entertain. So hopefully this takes your mind off it a little bit. Maybe after the headlines section.
Right.
You know. Yeah. Sorry. You got to bear with us for 10 to 15 minutes of like Debbie Downer.
But yeah, I mean, let's get right into housekeeping and headlines. Let's start off with Mark. You want to go first?
Sure. Well, everyone, obviously, unless you aren't living on Earth, you know,
literally
COVID, this little guy named COVID has taken over everything. And basically that's going to be all of our headlines because that's all there is. But, I just wanted to talk about one quick kind of little part of the whole coronavirus in the entertainment industry. And I thought it was really so scary and interesting and wild that there are playwrights out there. I saw that the New York Times reported just a couple days ago, as of this recording, that a couple playwrights have been asked by theaters to give back their advances, their advance payments.
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, which is so, oh my gosh, that's so awkward. And, you know, they have every right, as they did, to be like, no, like, you paid me, and sorry that the theater had to close and that the plays postponed or canceled. But, like, no. And what makes this even more awkward for them is that, I didn't really know this, that advances are usually paid, like, 99% of the time, they're paid whether the project goes on or not. Like, no matter what, is usually always money that's just given, whether it comes to fruition or not. So for the theaters to be awkwardly asking them to please give the money back, I mean, that is a scary sign that theaters are in trouble, which is really shitty, you know?
I mean, yeah, I don't know, like, do you think people, because I feel like people pay, they already spend their advances, right? Like, they use that money to pay their bills,
you know,
money towards the project. Like, that's just an awkward thing to ask for. And you can't fault anybody for being like, sorry, I don't got it no more. Like,
right. Especially, you're right, because especially these advances, and I guess maybe theater advances in general, they're only maybe around-ish, for these playwrights at least, like 10,000. So, I mean, you know, that's a nice chunk of change, but that goes quickly when you got, you know.
Especially if they're living in New York, that's going to get them through 2-3 months at most.
Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I thought that was really kind of eye opening and sad for everyone. Like, you know, and the playwrights were really cool and they didn't want to name drop the theater or theaters that reached out to them because they didn't understand they're hurting. But yeah, yikes. So awkward times.
Tom.
Yeah, well, just to continue, I mean, I had talked last episode about how we were starting to see the effect of coronavirus on the entertainment industry.
Wow.
Starting is an understatement. I mean, it is here. So now we have nearly every film, not all, which is very odd, but nearly every film that was scheduled to come out in April and early May has been pushed back off the schedule. Some of them haven't even been given a new date yet. Some of them are moving to Netflix, like the Issa Rae and Kumail Nanjiani movie, Lovebirds. That comedy's moving to Netflix.
Is it?
Some,
okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some films decided to come early onto Premiere Video on Demand, or is it Prime Video on Demand? What are they called? What's the P stand for, guys, in PVOD?
Home Premiere. Yeah.
Home Premiere Video on Demand, and they're charging, you know, about $19.99 to see said films, The Way Back being one of them, Onward being another.
Do you guys think that's fair? I think that's a fair price.
I think that's a fair price.
I don't know, guys.
Price of two movie tickets-ish.
I guess so, yeah. I don't know. It's still a little high. I mean, as of this recording, we don't know how many people have paid that amount for the movies that came out, but I am super curious this week to hear what the totals are because, yeah, I guess you're right. It's not too high, but it's still kind of high. Like a single person, like living alone, like I don't think I would pay that if I was living alone.
But how much are movie tickets by you guys? Because they're $20 for me.
Are they really
$20?
Oh,
in Connecticut, it's $12.
Oh, shit. Hollywood is expensive.
Are you serious? It's not by, that's not that much by you guys?
Well, no, I mean, $12. When I was in this, how many, Tom? 10?
12 at Connecticut, 12. In Connecticut AMCs, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, by me, it's like usually 15, so a little less than the city. I'm sure New York City now is 16 or 17, but so I don't know if they're that high yet. But yeah, I guess you're right. It's fair. It's just, again, like I could not if I was single. You know?
Here's where I do think it's a lot of money in this given situation, right? When everybody's trying to hold on to money because they don't know what they're going to be doing for work for the weeks and months ahead, maybe $19.99 is a little too much right now. And any other time, I think it'd be a fair price.
Yeah, that's a good point. Totally.
So, and then we have concerts being canceled. You know, Stagecoach and Coachella got pushed back. I'm not sure if I said that last episode or not, but... it's hitting music, it's hit Broadway, as Mark has mentioned, and now celebrities are even going out there and saying that they've tested positive for the coronavirus, right? So we had a couple weeks ago, Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson, Idris Elba and his wife have now gone public, Debbie Mazur.
Oh, I didn't know Debbie, wow.
Yeah, Debbie Mazur, she said that she woke up a couple weeks ago, and she and her family had like a slight fever, they had a ringing in their ear, a sore throat, but it went away very quickly. And then she said 6 days later, she woke up and felt like there was a demon in her. She said she had body aches like she could have never imagined having and a fever of 102.4. And she said she knew right away, I have corona. She went and got tested in New York City. Sure enough, she has it. So, Colton, the Bachelor from last season, he has tested positive. I mean, the
Lizzie Cohen.
Right, boom. Yes. Yeah, Andy Cohen has it. You know Andy probably got it from a housewife.
You know, I worry about his kid though. Doesn't he have a baby? He never talks about that baby.
Yeah,
he has a very little kid. He might be a year old now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So our thoughts are with all those people. And then of course you have Vanessa Hudgens making light of the situation and saying that it was all bullshit and that people were gonna die anyway.
Oof.
So go away, Vanessa. Like that, really, come on.
Very tone deaf. That was so weird. Did you see
that?
Did you get a chance to see the video?
I
think she might have
done coke or something.
I think she might have been on something. Because remember when she was doing Grease Live a couple years ago and she was so good? Remember her dad passed away like that weekend, that day?
Yes. Yeah.
So you would think she would be a little more sensitive about, you know, serious things like this. But yeah, yikes. But then you have, luckily, like celebrities doing really cool videos. Did you guys see like the Mel Brooks video with his
Mel and Max Brooks and then Kevin Bacon?
Yeah, so that's fun to see, you know, when people
using
are using
the platform for good things. Yeah.
Well, totally. Have you guys been in the D-Nice Instagram Live dance party, Club Quarantine? You guys got to get on it. It hit over 100,000 yesterday. Oh. Michelle Obama, Rihanna, like everybody.
Really?
I can't believe you guys haven't been in there. No. Y'all better get yourselves in there and listen to some tunes.
Wait, who's
D-Nice? D-Nice is a DJ, and his Instagram Live, he's been going live for like 8 to 9 to 10 hours a day playing the tunes, and everybody is in that bitch. Okay.
Wow.
Everybody. Oh, wow. So get into it.
And I also saw Nico Tortorella is like doing live free readings of his book, like a chapter a day. So I mean, it's kind of cool how some people are like using this as a time to like, you know, do something a little different, you know, a little cool to bring people together, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I just want to say shout out to all of my fellow freelancers out there who are really struggling. I know it's really hard.
Yeah.
A lot of us had a lot of jobs lined up and, you know, work was really good and work was coming and people were lining up one gig after another, and then it all just like flatlined. So unfortunately, you know, the production in Hollywood industry is shut down. There's literally nobody working. There's no shows going on. There's nothing happening. So it's a struggle.
Movies too, right?
Definitely. Oh yeah, everything. It's all it's a wrap. So, and even in New York as well. So
If like just the other day I saw like online, like, yeah, I'm doing this shoot, and I was like, wait, what? Why are you shooting anything? You should no. You know?
Yeah. So Yeah, so shout out to everybody out there who's struggling. You guys, we're gonna get through it. It'll be fine.
Are you worried, Foom? Are you, like, how are you doing? Because you're...
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I have been very fortunate to, like, have been working and have a good savings nest. And, you know, I've been informed that hopefully things will pick up very soon as they can, so.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just, I'm curious to see how this is gonna impact fall TV. Yeah. And even like the streamers, pilots, right? Like yeah. there's only so much Netflix can have in the pipeline, and everything's shut down right now. So they're literally not cranking on any new content. So, and there are even some shows that hadn't wrapped their season yet that they're probably not going to. And some of them, like Supernatural, are going off air.
Oh,
Superstore hadn't filmed America Ferrera's final episode yet.
No kidding.
No, nope. Yeah, wow. It's crazy.
I was just watching the really cool Rosie O'Donnell live Broadway thing on YouTube, which was fun, with a bunch of celebs. And yeah, I didn't even think about it. Like Jesse Tyler Ferguson was one of her many guests, and he said they luckily were able to shoot the Modern Family finale before all this. But yeah, imagine like these shows that are going off the air. Oh my gosh, if you didn't shoot, like, how does that work? I wonder if
I think a lot of shows are just going to end the season wherever they, whatever last episode had been, like, finalized, color corrected, all that stuff, and that'll just be the finale.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, like, I understand, like, it's just a ripple effect. Like, people don't understand, like, it's not just easy. You can't just go back and start filming again because there's programming. So it's like another show may start to, may supposed to be on the books to start airing at a certain point, and then it's like, shows book studios months in advance, years in advance. Like, it's just not so easy that you can just start up again.
Oh, yeah.
You
know? Now, let me ask this question, guys. Is post-production still going, or is that, like, a wrap, too?
I believe it still is, actually. Post, because it's easier for people to just work at home. It's slower. Things aren't happening as fast as they would if they were in their office and in their edit bays, but post-production is still going.
Got it. Okay, so that's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, multiple friends have... either heard from other friends or have been contacted to, like, start new gigs very soon as, like, now. So post is still happening, which is good.
And so is casting. Casting is still going.
Yeah, casting is still going, which is interesting because casting always changes, like, when the shoot is happening. So, you know, it'll be interesting how that goes. But what I thought was also interesting talking about this was that I wonder if, like, you know, like, Nicole Kidman's doing another HBO show. Like, the big shows that are supposed to be coming, like, this, like, spring, summer, I wonder if they'll just push to the fall, you know?
Yeah.
For, like, prime fall.
You know? So, yeah, the streamers and everyone will have to space out their premieres, which will be interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crazy.
Well, that's it for housekeeping and headlines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wah, wah. Sorry, everyone. But now we're going to pick it up. Now we're going to take you on a ride to the list.
Mm-hmm.
So, listeners, you've heard it for 91 episodes, I hope. I mean, if you're just joining us, about time. But this is the time where we like to tell you what we've been watching. As you know, we're working from home, just like many of you out there watching everything. And so we will tell you what we are liking, what we're hating, what is on our list. Let's go with Tom. Why don't you take us away? What is on your list for this week?
Okay. First thing on my list is the new Amazon series Hunters, which has been promoted for quite some time now. The promotion started right around The Irishman because Al Pacino is in Hunters. Mm-hmm. So when they were promoting Al Pacino in The Irishman on Netflix, they were also starting to promote Al Pacino is going to hit an Amazon series on Netflix called Hunters. Lo and behold, it has arrived. Folks, I'm going to tell you, it is an add this to your list. It is pretty damn good.
Nice.
In short, there's a lot. I have to be very careful when I give the synopsis because I don't want to give things away. But in short, it is about this boy played by Logan Lerman, named Jonah in New York City, 1977. He's an 18-year-old who discovers that his grandmother has been working in for a group of vigilantes, Jewish vigilantes, who are hunting Nazis that came to America after World War II and are living out in the open and still preaching their Nazi bullshit. So he gets wrapped up in this group. I won't tell you how. And then starts to see that, hey, this is kind of cool. We're onto something. And, you know, let's get these fuckers out of our country. Excuse my language. Like I said, the show stars Al Pacino as the head of this hunters group. Carol Kane has a supporting role in it. We haven't seen her in quite some time. She's very good
Kimmy
in it.
Schmidt.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I did not know that. Okay, cool.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. I never watched Kimmy Schmidt. Worth going and watching?
I didn't really finish it out.
Oh, okay. There's my answer, listeners. Anyway.
Movie and I were like,
anyway, back to Hunters. Yeah, so Logan Lerman, Al Pacino, Carol Kane. There's Josh Radnor is in it as well. There's some familiar faces that you'll see along the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What I like, I'm going to say that there are some things that I really like and some things that I don't, but the good outweighs the bad, and that's why I say it's an add this to your list. The good is that it's creative. It's a story that I don't think we've seen in quite some time. The acting is really good. Al Pacino really disappears into his role. You would never know it's him otherwise. The set design is really cool. They get everything about the 1970s period down to a T. What I don't like, however, and I've seen this in a lot of reviews, so I know I'm not alone. So I'm a really, really big fan of Holocaust movies and TV series, and I've said this on the podcast before. I know that's really morbid, but hey, it is what it is. I don't feel there are some scenes that flashback to Auschwitz. I don't feel that they are done with reverence that a lot of films such as The Pianist and Schindler's List did those scenes in. There's a certain authenticity missing to those scenes, and a lot of it feels a little bit exploitative. So that's what I don't like about the show. But in the end, it kept my interest. There were some good twists and turns. Episode 7 is a stellar, stellar standout episode about a blackout in New York City. It's done very, very well. I'm going to say add it to your list. Check it out. It is 10 episodes. It could have probably been whittled down to maybe 8. It might be one or two episodes too long. Fumi, you're shaking your head. Why don't you tell me what you think?
I didn't really. Okay, so I watched it. First episode, the reason why I kept watching it is because I feel like the start of the first episode, like, shocked me. I was like, whoa.
Yes.
Like, it was very, like, holy shit, what is going
on? And then 2 and 3 felt very different, right?
Yeah. I didn't finish it out. I don't know. I haven't decided whether I'm going to go back and watch it again. But I do agree with you, Tom. I do think that there, because I'm like you, I've got a huge history buff, and so I really love, like, World War II type history movies and shows. And I don't know. There is something about the flashback scenes that just are, like, they don't connect to you emotionally.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it's because they're trying to keep the same tone as, like, present day, but I don't know. There is something about the show that's interesting, but also something about the show that it's like,
yep. No,
missing.
Spot on, Foom.
There's
spot
definitely
on.
Something missing.
Huh.
Yep.
And
yep.
What year does it take place in?
1977.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So, Tom, you like it, though, overall.
I did, yeah, overall I did. I don't know that I'd come back for a season 2, and I had the same problem with The Man in the High Castle. So it's something with Amazon, the way that they do historical fiction that I don't love. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely say add this to your list for season 1.
Cool, okay.
Second thing on my list, this has been something that I've also been dying to check out for quite some time, and now that I got nothing to do, I finally did. The documentary Horror Noir. So freaking good, guys. Add
what
it to your
is
list.
This?
Okay.
It's on Shudder. Did you watch it on Shudder, Tom? Or
I did not. I bought it. I actually bought it on Apple for like $7.99 because they didn't have a rental fee. So, yes, it was a Shudder program, but now it's available on both Amazon and or Apple to purchase. You can't rent it, but you can purchase it. And basically, it's a documentary that takes you through the history of black in horror movies. So I thought that was so fresh. It was so interesting. The subjects, I mean, it's everybody from Jordan Peele's interview, Tony Todd, who played Candyman, Lawrence Fishburne's in it, Rachel True, I guess, because of The Craft. But I'm like, girl, like, why did you give her a microphone? That girl needs to sit down with her political views. I'm not here for that.
What
are they?
Yeah.
Isn't she, like, super... didn't she get, like, in the spotlight for being, like, super conservative?
Are you confusing her with Stacey Dash from Clueless?
Okay. Sorry, Rachel.
Not all black people look alike, Tom. Oh my God.
Not every black girl from the best movies ever in the 90s are the same.
Oh, my God. All right. Sorry,
but
Rachel.
I will give you that, Tom, because Rachel True did... I didn't know anything political, so maybe that's wrong, but I did know she, like, blasted someone on her flight on social media. She did something that was kind of weird on social media recently.
She's definitely like taken heat recently for something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so Rachel True is in it because of her iconic role in The Craft. And it basically just takes you through, it's really not only a history of like black representation in horror movies, but in cinema as a whole. It starts with, you know, the 1930s and King Kong and how that was a very racist depiction of how the whites feared the black culture. Mm-hmm. And then it talks about how in the 1950s, a lot of movies took place in laboratories, right? Because there was this, like, sci-fi obsession. And back then, black people didn't have a place in the laboratories, or they did, right? If you've seen Hidden Figures, you know they obviously did, but it wasn't something that was well known. So they kind of, like, faded to the background as far as on the screen goes and in cinema. Then it takes you through the 50s and 60s when, like, Blackula and blaxploitation films kind of really got their rise. And
I liked that part of the doc when they, like, start talking about that, because I've never seen, like, Blackula, but it was fun to see people talk about their version of those stories, you know?
Yeah, and how much it you know, how it impacted people to see, like, true representations of themselves on film. And then it goes into the 80s when black people were in all the slasher movies, but they were like the token black person, and they would never make it to the end. They were never the final girl. And then, you know, present day with Us, and how Get Out, Jordan Peele's Get Out, and how Get Out really, like, just flipped the script on things, and it, how it's changing the history of horror for the good and for the future. And I thought it was wonderful. It was about an hour and 20 minutes long. Very, very informative. They have a couple of, like, film history professors there to kind of guide you through the history of it all. Fantastic. Mark, you've seen it, so what do you think?
I saw it. For some reason, I didn't love it. I think because I loved Eli Roth's show that I talked about on this show that was all about the history of horror, and there was some crossover. I think also a few people told me I would love horror noir, so I think it was just hyped a little bit for me.
Okay.
But no, I enjoyed it, and I thought it was cool. I love that they got some more obscure actors as well, that you're like, oh my God, yeah, that's that girl that's in that one movie, you know, like, they really pull together, like, a good core.
Yeah, and, like, it was great to see Loretta Devine, right? Because she was an urban legend, so it was awesome.
I thought it was cool to have them sit in a movie theater. Just the set of the doc, like, to interview them, I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah, totally. Love it. Awesome, Tom. Okay.
Yeah, I dug it.
What do you have for us, Fumi?
So the first thing on my list is Self-Made, the story or the inspired life of Madam C.J. Walker. And for those who don't know who Madam C.J. Walker was, she was the first black woman millionaire with hair up in, like, the 1910s. She was born free, lived with her parents, were sharecroppers, and then created this formula for black hair growth and made herself a millionaire. And so it stars Octavia Spencer, and it is on Netflix. It is 4 episodes. They're not even about an hour. They're not even up to
I was surprised by how short they are.
Yeah, exactly. I was surprised as well.
I didn't even realize it was a show. I thought it was a movie. Okay.
It's not. It's a series, but I guess it could just be like a long movie if you really kind of think about it.
Yeah.
It's an ad. I enjoyed it. It was not what I expected by any means. I think when I first saw the trailer for this, I was expecting that kind of like of the tone of that movie that Queen Latifah did on HBO, which is like
Bessie.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Love
Bessie. I was kind of expecting that kind of tone. This is not it. It's very like kind of it's like on a dramedy, say. Like, so for instance, Octavia Spencer plays Madam C.J. Walker, and it takes you through her life, but it also has modern music, so it's all like modern music. And then she has like these visions or thoughts in her mind where she's like in a punching a ring like against her nemesis, and like little things like that are sort of like pop in, I guess, to like modernize it.
Like in a boxing match?
Thank you, like a boxing match. Yes, exactly. It's interesting. It's done totally different. It's really not what I expected by any means. Tiffany Haddish is also in the series. She plays her daughter. It's really interesting to watch Tiffany Haddish act against Octavia Spencer. I do enjoy Tiffany Haddish. I think she's very funny, but the range that Octavia has compared to Tiffany, it's really noticeable.
Yeah.
Blair Underwood plays...
Oh, he's great.
He plays the husband.
He's so handsome.
He really is, but he loves to play a bad husband role, honey. He just is so good at that. He loves to do it. So it's really good. I think it has a really well-rounded cast. There are elements of it, like I said, that are super funny, and then there are elements of it that are more deep. It's really interesting to sort of see this woman's life. It's inspired by, that is the title of the series, so I don't know how true to... history it actually is, but I think that it gives enough to Madam C.J. Walker's life that I'm going to take it for what it is at face value, but it's definitely an ad. I think you should definitely check it out. It's really not that long at all. Like, I was anticipating it taking me at least like a couple days to get through. I did it in a day. It really is like not that deep in terms of time.
Yeah,
it's so funny from that you say that you were expecting a tone of Bessie. I was actually, the way when I saw the trailer, I was anticipating more like a Fosse Verdon, which is kind of in a way similar to Bessie. Actually, now that you say it, I checked out the first episode literally right before we started recording because I had like 45 minutes to kill, and I saw the first episode was 46 minutes.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay. I was like, cool. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I dug the first episode. I'll keep watching.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because after the first episode, I was kind of like, do I like this? Do I not like this? I decided I did, and I just kept watching. But I definitely was just a little like, oh, this is not what I expected.
It's a little light.
Yeah,
kind of. Is. Yeah, it yeah.
is. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the first thing on my list. But add it. Mark, are you think you're going to check it out?
I think so. I mean, honestly, guys, I really do love Octavia. I know everyone does.
I know.
But, like, I think it's so interesting you say that, Plume, because, yeah, I love Tiffany as well, but... I can just picture, like, Octavia makes it all look so effortless that I could see there being a difference there. But, yeah, it sounds good. Sounds cool.
Okay, so the second thing on my list is called 20s. It is a new comedy by Lena Waithe, and it's on BET. It is an ad. It's so fun, you guys. Like, it's very much, it reminds me very much of Insecure.
Okay.
So the premise is kind of similar. It's about a group of friends who are in their 20s. They live in Hollywood. It's very much like life of like my friends and my life in 20s. There's one friend who's a talent exec or an executive, another friend who used to be an actress, and then another friend who wants to become a writer. And they like are together, and they're basically like struggling through like the Hollywood life. But they're 20s. I don't know if they even are considered millennials. Are they Gen Z at 20? I don't even know.
They're
Gen Z, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They are so, like, some, like, the one main girl, she is a newcomer. Her name is Jonica T. Gibbs. She plays Hattie. She's a lesbian inspiring screenwriter. She is so annoying, but in a very funny way. It's like she wants to be a serious writer, but like doesn't write. You know, I mean, like
we can empathize.
She like wants to be like, but like this is what she wants to do with her life, but yet she like she never writes, or when she does, she's always has writer's block. Her one friend is a super successful executive who's basically, like, letting her sleep in her house. Her boyfriend is a mess. Like, it's just a really fun group of friendships, and they each have their own pocket of, like, each person we all have in our own friend group who, like, we know who reminds me of them or reminds you of that person. And then there is the woman who owns the show, who's this executive producer on her show, And her name is Ida. She's very intriguing. I still, 4 episodes in, have not yet figured her out. She's an odd bird. She's very, like, sophisticated and beautiful, but at the same time, very strange. And I can't tell if she's hitting on the girl who plays Hattie or not, because Hattie is her writer's assistant. It's very odd, their dynamic. I still am trying to figure out what's going on there. And a friend of mine told me that she's supposedly molded after Mara Brockett-Keel. And if you don't know who that is, you should Google it. She's a very well-known writer in Hollywood, which makes it even more hilarious to think that that's who she's supposedly modeled after. But anyway, this series is brought to you by Lena Waithe. She is basically trying to transform BET, and I'm here for everything that she's doing. I think she's bringing out really creative and different content that is different from what BET typically pushes out. So check it out. It's called 20s. It's a half-hour comedy, and it's a lot of fun.
Is Lena Waithe in it?
She is not in it. She, when the very first episode, she narrates the very top of it, and I was like, ooh, I don't know if I'm going to like this. But it's literally, that's the only portion of it that you hear from her, and then that's it. So she's not in it. That's to say, I don't know if she will pop her head in throughout the series. I don't know what's to come, but as of now, no, she's not there.
How does it compare to Insecure for you? Better, not as good.
Insecure is a more superior show, but also at the same time, it's also had 4 seasons in, so it just may be something where I just, like, love that show so much. I don't necessarily say that it's worse than Insecure, but 20s has definitely the potential to, like, get to where Insecure is.
Got it. Okay. Cool.
And I was going to ask Foom, maybe just because it's kind of the most recent show about, like, friends in their 20s, and one of them is a struggling writer. How does it compare to Girls?
Oh, well, I hate watched Girls throughout the entirety of that
I think
run,
everyone did.
So, so I'm going to say 20s is a better show. The characters are a lot more likable.
Okay, good.
Yeah, Girls for me, I mean, although Hattie does have
a little bit of Hannah.
Similarities of Hannah. Like, they are definitely, like, self-absorbed and, like, you know, I'm trying, but you're not really trying, and everyone else can see that but you. So they're definitely have similar dynamics, but overall I think Hattie is a more likable character.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank God, because, you know, you can't get more unlikable than Girls. And speaking of Lena Waithe, before I get into my list, this item isn't on my list, but Lena Waithe is now in the new season of Westworld. Did you guys check?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I saw that she's there, but I stopped watching that show because I went over my head.
Oh, guys. If you might recall, season one, I talked about on the show, loved season one of Westworld.
Yeah, so good.
Season one, wow. Every episode, what? Season two, complete opposite. Could not keep my eyes open. Ladies and gentlemen, I watched the premiere of season 3, not because I'm a glutton for punishment, but I thought, okay. It's now set, like, in the real world, like Evan Rachel Wood's out of that blue country girl dress. She's looking sleek. All right, let's see what the robots are doing in the real world. Could not keep my eyes open. Westworld, RIP. I am giving you up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Goodbye. And Aaron Paul is in it, and it's very obvious he's wearing a wig, probably because he shot it when he had his buzzed head for the Octavia show.
But it's distracting, right?
It's
like,
so
when you have a bad wig on someone, it's like you cannot focus on anything else.
Exactly. And you would think a guy with short hair, it's like, whatever, but it's like, no, I can tell that is such fried, fake hair, and that is not his hair. Like, it's not blowing in the breeze, like... So, yeah. And you know what? You know what I realized? Westworld needs Tandy Newton. In the first episode of season 3, there's no Tandy Newton. And I'm like, guys, like...
But she's still on the show, right?
Yeah, she's still on it.
Okay, okay.
And, like, she's, like, the second name in the credits, but her character just doesn't pop up in the first episode. And it's like, guys, you should give her own spinoff by now. That's how vital she is to the show. Anyway, I digress. Cancel Westworld. But anyway... onto my list. So I have 2 items that have been on my radar for a while. So it's kind of fun to every now and then have a list that you, I mean, I want to talk about all my lists, but this week I really want to talk about this list. So 2 items, 1 movie, 1 TV show. The movie is The Hunt.
Uh-huh.
The Hunt from
Blumhouse. You've mentioned this, yes.
We've mentioned this.
Not to be confused with Hunters.
Oh, exactly. You're right, Tom. From Hunters to The Hunt. No Al Pacino in The Hunt, but we have Well, Hilary Swank, yeah. I mean, two-time Oscar
Justin
winner.
Hartley.
Justin Hartley, who's great in the movie. And yes, uh-huh, totally, yes. But so The Hunt, as you already know by now, we've mentioned it a few times, was supposed to come out a while ago in September, was basically postponed because of Trump and lots of people getting all up in arms, came out earlier this month on Friday the 13th to then have an unlucky time in the movie theater. But now, much like Tom was telling us earlier, other 1999 rentals, Invisible Man, Emma, Onward, The Hunt is now available. Everyone, I didn't pay full price for it. I got a $1 deal from Vudu. Sign up for Vudu if you have not yet. It's free. You pay as you go. Maybe the promo deal is still happening, but I shit you not, I gasped. I was able to see a $20 movie for $1. Anyway, so The Hunt stars Betty Gilpin, who I love. She's from GLOW, Nurse Jackie, lots of stuff. And she went to Fordham, and we had a class together in Fordham. So
that's
really
cool.
Yeah, really weird how, you know, 10 years later, now I see her in all these things. But so it stars Betty Gilpin, Justin Hartley, Hilary Swank, Ike Barinholtz, Emma Roberts, lots of really good actors. I have to give it up for Amy Madigan and Reed Birney, two older actors who steal the movie. They are so funny. I would say add this to your list. It's not
really.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. It's very
I
mixed.
I feel like I want to like it.
You feel like you wouldn't?
I feel like I will.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell everyone right off the bat. This is a comedy. It's a gross out, bloody, violent comedy, but we were cackling. If you are not in the mood for a comedy, don't see this. Because I could see if people were like, it's not that serious. It's not that deep whatsoever. Have a drink, have a joint. This movie is a midnight cult movie. It will live on, I think, for years, like at 2 a.m. or whatever, or like be in the theaters at like midnight, have like, you know, not sing-alongs, but like quote-alongs. It's really funny. Betty Gilpin gives some great physical comedy. It's very physical. We already know the premise, and the premise is pretty much the same thing you already know. So these people wake up in a field. They have no idea how they got there, but all of a sudden weapons are given to them, and they just start being shot at. They have to save themselves. They have to try to survive the hunt. And they find out that they are, conservative deplorables, as they're called in the movie, and they are being hunted by the elitist liberals. The whole time I was kind of, I don't want to give this away, I don't think it's a spoiler, but the whole time I was kind of waiting for a twist, because I feel like once Trump like canceled the movie, then it was coming out again, the studio was like being very coy, and they're like, no, it's not really what you think it is. No, it is. It's that. unless I miss something, which I might have, because here's the only thing. It's an add this to your list. However, I do understand the mixed reviews because it's so simple that you do expect there to be just one more inch of something. There's something missing, and I don't know how to put it into words, but there is something that it's like, okay, uh-huh. You know, the whole time I'm like, I think something's going to happen that I'm not expecting. But I say that also saying that I enjoyed it thoroughly. Lots of great action. It's kind of obvious that Hilary Swank was only available a few days because some scenes you don't see her face at all. It's very obvious it's not her. It's someone else with like dark hair. So I don't know what happened there.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Girl, where are you? You're not working.
I have a question. If you didn't get this rented for $1, would you have been upset to pay if you would pay $20 to see this?
Fantastic question, Fumi. You are the Barbara Walters of our time. now, that's a really good question. I hadn't thought about that. For $20, you know, well, hey, Greg and I both watched it. We enjoyed it. Like, when it ended, we both were like, huh, that was fun, you know? So I would say, yeah, it's worth a $20 rental, but I could totally see some people out there being like, that was $20? Like, I have to tell you, this movie should never have been in theaters. This is a streaming movie all the way. It is a streaming movie. It is the kind of movie you're going to want to post about. It's just so zeitgeisty and so of the moment that like, here's also the thing, and this is no shade whatsoever. If anything, it's praise. It feels smaller. It feels a smaller budget. That I just feel like just put it on streaming. Just let everyone see it right away. So
yeah.
But lots of good surprises. If I could kind of merge it into an equation from other movies, it's almost like a little bit of Final Destination and it's Shocks meets a little bit of Saw and a little bit of what did I say? Like, I don't know. That's kind of an amalgamation of a few other horror movies. But again, total comedy. You will laugh. Some people, all they had to do was stand there and I was laughing. So I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Add The Hunt to your list. Check it out. I totally understand. If you don't want to do $20, find a promo code somewhere. Voodoo.com. My other item is a TV show that has been on my radar for a while, and I know Fumi watched at least some of it as well. I don't know if Tom saw it. I don't think Tom has Hulu. But Hulu just released the first three episodes.
I'm so excited.
Of Little Fires Everywhere. Little Fires Everywhere based on the book a couple years ago. I didn't read the book, so this is my review coming from someone who did not read the book. It stars, as we know, they're all over the place, Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington, two actresses that are killing this show. I mean, they are good.
Mark.
So good. And I was worried because Reese plays basically almost identical to her role in Big Little Lies, another show with Little in it. How weird. So I was a little nervous. I was like, wait, like based on the first episode, I was kind of like the whole thing. I was like, okay, it's good, but is it great? And like Reese is doing the same thing. Huh? Guys, whatever you're feeling, if you've only watched the first episode, watch the episode 2 and 3. Now I understand why Hulu was like, no, release 3 episodes. At the end of the 3rd episode, oh my God, I can't stop thinking about it. I love the show. I think it's great. I say add it to your list. It's fun. It's not a hard watch. It's pulpy. It's set in the late 90s. The soundtrack is awesome.
The details
really? To all their... Oh, yeah. It's 1997. They live in a house that is straight out of JonBenet.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's so good. And, like, all the little details to the 90s, the clothes, the hair, the style, just all the little details, really good. My only complaint is it does feel, even though they curse, and there's sex and cursing, and there's some dark stuff going on for sure, it does feel a little...
kind of,
yes, a little general audience TV, and that's because ABC Signature is involved in producing, and
it
feels a little broadcasty, which is also why when I first was watching it, I was like, why is Reese doing this? Kerry Washington, I understand, obviously she was on ABC for years, but Reese, I'm like, you want to do like an ABC show? But it picks up in all sorts of ways. Don't let that kind of deter you. I think it's worth it. I just want Joshua Jackson to have something to do, because he doesn't have much to do so far. So I'm hoping he gets some fun little side storyline, something a little shady or sexy, because I just feel like he's a great actor who...
He's being a little underused.
Yes. But the kids are great. There's a lot of kids. It's that kind of show, kind of like at least the early days of Riverdale, where I am intrigued by both the parents and the kids' storylines,
totally.
Which is rare. What did you think, Foom? You like it too?
I literally actually just finished watching the first 2 episodes right before we started recording.
Yeah.
And I think it's shot beautifully. The opening mm-hmm. credits are like stunning to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that they grabbed me within the first opening shot of seeing that gorgeous house.
Yeah.
And I was like devastated I feel like I was looking at it from Reese's character's eyes, and I was just like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
I think that Carrie and Reese are like, I just mouth agape. I thought the same thing you did, Mark. I was like, oh, this is the exact same character she played on Big Little Lies. And I also thought that too. I was like, oh, they both have Little in it. I didn't wonder what this is about.
Yeah.
But I think that Reese is just such a phenomenal actress that even though the characters are the same, there's still something about her character on Little Fires Everywhere that I do see a little bit of a difference mm-hmm. between her character and Big Little Lies.
Yep, I agree with you, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Like, and the girl who plays Kerry Washington's daughter.
Oh, stunning. Amazing. Great.
Like, when they are together and they're acting together, Kerry Washington and that girl, I'm like, my eyes are just like glued to the screen. Like, I just want it. I think they just play off of each other so, so well.
Yep.
I'm intrigued by the relationship she's developing with Reese Witherspoon's son.
Moody. Uh-huh.
Moody.
Yeah.
But then also she's like into Trip, and I'm like, well, where is this going to go?
Yeah.
I love it. And then I also, the girl who plays Izzy, she's super like, for her. But then at the same time, I'm like, why are you so angry? Like, I'm interested to know more about that backstory and understand more of why her character is the way she is. Mm-hmm. And then the subtle nuances. What I find fascinating about the show more than anything is, like you said, it takes place in the 90s, and the subtle nuances and discussions of like race, mm-hmm. and like the conversations that they have because they feel like they're this like super woke family.
Mm-hmm.
But like the things that they say.
Then I'm cringing. I'm like, oh God, oh God, oh God.
It's fascinating. Yes, utterly it really is. Fascinating to just watch their, listen to their conversations. I love it. I think that I haven't watched episode 3 yet. I'm kind of saving it.
Oh, boom.
I'm
saving it. Oh, I can't wait. Oh my God, I can't wait for you.
I can't wait to keep watching.
It's good. Yes. And I totally agree. It, basically, the whole show, I realized I forgot to give a brief synopsis, but Reese and Carrie, they play Elena Richardson and Mia Warren. Mia is an artist, and she's a single mom with her teen daughter. They come to Shaker Heights, Ohio. I think it's Ohio. And Reese rents out their rental property to them. So they are their tenants. And so right off the bat, there's just a weird kind of heated, you know, back and forth, even though Reese, you know, like Fumi just said, thinks she's very woke and, you know, is very nice. And then, and Mia has this chip on her shoulder. We don't know much about her past yet. And then each episode, it's such a great little tug of war with the yes. kids, with the adults. Like sometimes they're on the same page and then, oh my God, it backfires and now they're enemies. I think it was, I can't remember if it was episode 2 or 3, but there's a nice little, oh, I think it was 2. Their bonding moment after the book club.
Yes,
did you see that?
It made me tear up. Yes, I dropped a tear because I thought just the way that Reese and Carrie acted. I mean, give them the Emmys already. Now, you know they're going to get nominated. Like, you know it's happening. Like, it's so good.
Tom, we got to give you our passwords because you got to watch it. It's good. It's going to be talked about. And the race, it's just really interesting race stuff. A lot of good discussions and what's right and what's wrong and what's, you know, it's good. So I can't rave about it enough. And it's funny because after the first episode, I would have still talked about it and said, add it to your list. But I would have been like, you know, it's a fun, interesting little show to have on. But after episode 3, I'm like, give me more right now, please.
And there's going to be 8 episodes total?
Yep. 8 episodes. Yeah. It's a mini series, but that's what Big Little Lies was as well. So who knows? I assume though, since this is, I just get the vibe this will not go on, but you know, we'll see. But yeah, 8 episode miniseries, Little Fires Everywhere. Check it out, everybody. Hulu, this came at a good time. Now that we're all home and like ready for some good drama. Yeah. Check it out. All right, everybody. So that is our list. Sorry for the little, you know, deep dive into Little Fires Everywhere, but I just can't help it. So to recap, to add it up, we had From the Hunt to Hunters. Hunters is on Amazon Prime, Al Pacino. Check it out. Horror Noir is on Shudder, and it's also on Prime and iTunes. Is that right,
yep.
Tom? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So rent that, a cool doc about the history of black horror. Then Fumi had 20s from BET, from Lena Waithe. Very cool. And then Self-Made, inspired by the life of Madam C.J. Walker on Netflix, starring the one and only Octavia. And then I had, of course, Little Fires Everywhere on Hulu and The Hunt, which is basically available everywhere. I saw it on Vudu, but it's iTunes, everything. So check out all that. I think that was all ads. So that's pretty cool. Go on. And before we wrap it up, it's Tom's turn to play a little game with us.
Uh-huh. It has been a little bit since we played Tom's Trivia, so I thought it was time. Are you guys ready?
Yes. I am ready. I'm so excited for the topic. Do you want to tell us what it is, Tom?
Uh-huh. But first I will tell, in case we have any new listeners who've never heard of Tom's Trivia before, it is essentially a chance for Fumi and Mark to demonstrate their entertainment knowledge. I usually pick, I stick to one topic or theme. I ask about 8 or 9 questions. Tonight we have 9, and we have a bonus 10th if it ever is needed, should you guys tie it up.
Now, Tom, quick question. Who do you think will win tonight?
I already know who's going to win. You're going to win, because I don't know nothing about no Irish.
I don't know, girl. I don't know. It's a toss-up. It's a toss-up.
Okay.
So, anyway, the way Tom's Trivia works is I will throw these questions out at rapid fire. Fumi and Mark have a chance to answer it. Whoever, I have to finish asking the question completely first, answer is disqualified. Whoever answers correctly first gets a point. Whoever has the most points at the end, they are the Entertainment Geek of the Week. And as Fumi said, this month's topic, because it's March and we just celebrated St. Patrick's Day, we're going to go with all things Irish. Mm-hmm. So my questions are all based on either film, movie, movies, TV shows, or music that has some kind of Irish connection.
Oh, God. Okay.
Are you guys ready?
Oh, yep. Boy. Yes.
Okay, first question. This famous HBO show is known for filming in Ireland.
Game of Thrones.
Yes, Fooey. Oh, boy. Number two. Just last month, this romance movie set in Ireland and starring Hilary Swank announced the sequel.
Oh, P.S. I Love You.
Yep. Mark.
I was an extra in that.
Oh, were you? Ew, why are they doing a sequel to that movie?
I know, it's like, how?
Oh, God.
All right, number three. The popularity of this Irish band can be tied back to Grey's Anatomy, which featured many of its songs in the show's early days.
Oh, I totally know what you're talking about, but I don't remember the name of the band.
Oh my God, the best band ever. I saw them live and I cried. Snow Patrol.
Yes. Yeah. Mark, is that what you were thinking, Foom?
Yep. Yep.
Oh my God, their music on that show was perfect.
So good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mark leads so far. Next question. Which franchise has had more installment? Child's Play or Leprechaun?
Leprechaun.
Child's Play.
Mark, Leprechaun has had 8. Child's Play has had 7.
Oh, wow.
So Mark's got 3 so far.
Have you guys seen any Leprechaun movies? I don't think I have.
Yeah.
I've sadly seen, like, the first 3. Once he went to, like, the hood and space, I was like, I'm going to give up. No, I'm not making fun. It's like Leprechaun to the hood or something like that.
Yeah, back to the hood. Leprechaun in the hood and then Leprechaun back to the hood.
Oh, boy.
Fun little trivia. Tangi Miller, who I love so much from Felicity, was in Leprechaun Back to the Hood.
Girl.
All right, next question. Irish action star Liam Neeson has been nominated once for Best Actor at the Academy Awards for an iconic and historical Steven Spielberg film. Which film?
Schindler's List.
Ooh.
That was a tough one. Is that a tie?
Let's say it's a tie. Because Fumi needed that point real bad. So.
What? We came in and said that at the same time. Don't do it.
I'm just saying, Mark is 3 points ahead of you. So I'm saying let's make it a tie so that way you get a point.
Okay.
All right, next question. One of Irish band U2's most popular albums is named after a U.S. national park that I just visited. Which park?
Oh, God. Tom travels everywhere.
Yellowstone?
No.
Hold on. Oh, gosh. Wait.
Five, four, three, two.
Blarney
Stone. Joshua Tree.
Was that the one that they forced on all of our phones? Oh, Tom, you don't have an iPhone.
Wait,
what'd you say, Boom?
Remember when U2 forced an Apple iTunes forced their album on all of our phones?
Oh, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For a while, U2 and iTunes were like inseparable. Yeah.
All right, so no one got that one. All right, next question. Irish actress Saoirse Ronan got her first Oscar nomination in the Best Actress category for this film about leaving Ireland.
Brooklyn.
Mark again.
That's a good movie.
It is good.
Such a good movie. I love that movie so much. Next question. In the history of the Grammys, only one winner has ever refused their award. Who is that female Irish singer?
Sinead O'Connor.
Yes, Fumi.
Nice.
And final question. This tall, handsome X-Men actor is Irish by lineage, but was not technically born in Ireland and is such often mistakenly considered British.
Hugh Jackman?
Nope.
Patrick Stewart?
No, neither of you. Michael Fassbender.
Oh. Wait, so wait, people think he's Irish?
No, people think he's British, but he's Irish.
But he's Irish. Right. Oh. Yes. He's great.
I just watched X-Men Dark Phoenix, too.
How was that film?
As being a huge X-Men fan, I totally understand why people shat on it, but I don't think it was as bad as people made it seem. Was it a good ending to that franchise? No, it wasn't horrible either.
Oh, okay. I do want to check it out. All right.
Well, congratulations, Mark. You are the winner, but let's just see what the bonus question would. Let's see if you guys would have gotten this one. I tested these questions with Jeff beforehand. And he was really stumped by this one until after I said it. And then he was like, oh, okay.
Huh.
Bonus question. This Irish actor may be Irish, but I think most people would associate the color gray with him instead of green.
Ian McKellen?
No.
Irish actors last
This
night,
Irish right? actor may be actor. This Irish actor may be Irish, but I think most people would associate the color gray with him instead of green.
Oh, Jamie Dornan.
Yes, Mark. Ah. 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking Ian McKellen with Gandalf Grey from Lord of the Rings.
But why
green?
Because
of
Ireland.
Ireland. Green.
Oh.
The Emerald Isle, Fumi.
Wow. That was
awesome.
That was a good one. Have either of you guys ever been to Ireland?
Not yet. No, I would love to.
I loved Ireland. The people are so nice there.
I've heard
nothing but great things. Nicest people ever. Same. And the green, it really is so green. When people say that you've never seen green like that, it's indescribably green.
Like the grass and the trees and everything?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
The grass and everything,
amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay,
it's like
cool.
such a deep, deep green that you've never seen here. Wow. So, all right, well, that was our episode. That was fun, guys. This was a good chat amidst all of this gloom and doom that we have.
Since I am 50% Irish, I feel like it's only appropriate that I won. So,
there you go.
For this. Thank you.
Sláinte.
What?
All right. Well, thank you guys. What? Wait, you don't know what sláinte is?
No. What is that?
It's the way you give a toast in Irish.
Oh, I mean, I'm 50%. I don't really, you know.
Well, that is our episode. Thank you so very much, listeners, for checking us out. Check out previous episodes on addthistoyourlist.com. We're also on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher if you'd prefer to go there instead.
And
Spotify. Yep, don't forget that one. Thank you to Jay, Allie, Greg, and Sabrina for everything you do for this podcast. We wouldn't be here without you, literally. Mm-hmm. And leave us reviews, please. iTunes, go and give us 5 stars or 4 stars or nothing less than that, though.
Yeah.
Or else we don't want to know you. And we'll be back soon.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. And that's all she wrote.
Bye.
Bye.
That's it.